So I guess if it's true that confession is good for the soul, then I need to begin today with a confession that even though I have been preaching for more than 60 years, and during that time I have preached thousands and thousands of sermons, including about just about everybody mentioned in the Bible, from Mephibosheth to Melchizedek, I have never preached a sermon about Joseph until today. I think it's really because he's mentioned so seldom, really only five times, and even then, of course, Jesus and Mary are really the main characters, even in those stories. But what I realized in preparing for today is that even though we know so little, it tells us so much. And the gift that Joseph offers us that we are unwrapping today couldn't be more important for this holy season. And then when Pastor Karen asked me to preach today specifically to men and asked me to make this sermon a love letter to men, I thought, oh, I've never done that before either. And so I'm really in new territory here today and hoping that everything that I say will be as meaningful to women also as all of the things that Reverend Dina shared with us about Mary last week were also meaningful to us as men. And so let's begin today by listening to these words from the first chapter of the Gospel of Matthew. These are the words that introduce us to Joseph. Now, the birth of Jesus the Messiah took place in this way. When his mother Mary had been engaged to Joseph, but before they lived together, she was found to be with child from the Holy Spirit. Her husband Joseph, being a righteous man and unwilling to expose her to public disgrace, planned to dismiss her quietly. But just when he had resolved to do this, an angel of the Lord appeared to him in a dream and said, "Joseph, son of David, do not be afraid to take Mary as your wife, for the child conceived in her is from the Holy Spirit. She will bear a son, and you are to name him Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." All this took place to fulfill what had been spoken by the Lord through the prophet, "Look, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and they shall name him Emmanuel," which means God is with us. When Joseph awoke from the dream, he did as the angel of the Lord commanded him. He took her as his wife, but had no marital relations with her until she had borne a son, and he named him Jesus. So the first thing for us to know in order to understand Joseph's gifts today is how different marriage was then from the way it is today. First of all, marriage then was a legal contractual agreement between two families. When two families decided that the son of one should marry the daughter of another, the prospective groom's father took a certain amount of agreed upon money and gave it to the prospective bride's father, and then the couple was betrothed. But betrothal was also a legal and contractual arrangement which could only be broken by a legal divorce. It was unlike what we think of today as engagement because, first of all, betrothal was expected to last for about a year, during which, even though the couple, for all purposes and intents, were already married, they were forbidden to live together and they were forbidden to consummate the marriage physically. That did not happen until the betrothal was over, when the bride was literally physically carried from her father's house to the house of her new husband for the wedding feast. And then when the feast was over, then the marriage was considered to be completed. And according to the Gospel of Matthew, it was during that period of betrothal that Mary became pregnant. And there is simply no way to overstate the scandal that that was. As Matthew tells us, if this had been made public, she would have been publicly disgraced. But remember, this was a totally patriarchal, a totally male-dominated society and religion. And so nothing less than Joseph's reputation and honor as a man was also at stake here. He would have been ridiculed and humiliated if this had been made known. And knowing that he was not the father of this child, Jewish law even gave Joseph the right to have Mary stoned to death for adultery. You remember the story when Jesus met the woman taken in adultery in the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John? That tells us that even decades from this period of time, women were still being stoned to death for adultery. And we know from stories and literature outside the Bible at this exact time that there were men who, under these same circumstances, were having their betrothed spouses stoned to death. But according to our story, while Joseph was still trying to figure out some way to save Mary's reputation, an angel in a dream tells him, "Don't be afraid of all this social stigma and this religious condemnation and all the shame that might be brought on you because of this situation, because this child was conceived by the Holy Spirit." According to our story, Joseph was a righteous and upright man. That meant that he did what was right and true to the best of his knowledge and ability. And in this case, it was to follow through and fulfill the marriage contract in every way possible. Now, you know there had to be whispers and snickers and rumors all over the place. People could count. They could count the number of months between the wedding feast and the time that this baby was born. But Joseph rejected all of that social pressure. He rejected the religious condemnation, and he did what was right and true for him. And that is Joseph's gift to us. Specifically to us men, it is this: you don't have to conform to what society or tradition or religion tell you it means to be a man. You can do what is right and true for you. And his gift is so impressive and it's so important because, as I said, his was a totally patriarchal religion and society. I know patriarchy can be a very overused word, so let's be clear about exactly what we mean by it. Patriarchy is a system in which men have artistic, social, religious, political, and economic privilege, power, and prerogative that women don't have. Anthropologists tell us that of the more than 1,000 definable societies in the world today, only 6 of them can be called matriarchies, and all of them are small and tribal in nature, that none of them can be called egalitarian, where women and men share privilege, power, and pride. That means all the rest of them are still patriarchal. So in a very special way, Joseph's gift is a challenge, and it's an invitation, and it's an opportunity for us to reject and even dismantle patriarchy as we have defined it. And what I want to share with you this morning is that if we accept this gift, and if we accept that challenge, then 2 things could happen. The first is that it could change the way men relate to women. And secondly, it could change the way that we men relate to each other. So let's open this gift and see first how it could change the way that men relate to women. There was a time when I was an active MCC elder when the global MCC executive leadership team consisted of 8 women and me. Barb Crabtree was one of those 8 women. And I found myself, as I traveled around the world, being asked, "So how do you feel about this?" And my response was, "It makes me wonder what the church and the world might look like today if the voices of women had been heard equally with the voices of men for the last 2,000 years. It makes me wonder what the church and the world might look like 2,000 years from now if we only heard the voices of women for the next 2,000 years. The point is not that the voices of women are more important than the voices of men. They're not. The point is that the voices of women are not less important than the voices of men. But that privilege and power and prerogative that we talked about, that exists only as long as men insist that what we believe and what we say and do and think is more important than what women believe and say and think and do. There is overwhelming evidence that from the beginning of this Christian movement, men have conspired to hide and deny and diminish and belittle both the presence and the influence of women. And don't think that hasn't continued up to this day, because it has. The largest Christian church in the world today still refuses to ordain women to ministry. Why? Because they're not men. And the second largest Christian church in the world today still insists that women must be submissive to men in all things. You know, I've always said that God didn't wake up on that October morning in 1958 and look around and say, I don't think there are quite enough different Christian churches out there yet. I think I'll make one more. I don't know if you ever thought about this before, but just being a part of this church is a revolutionary act in a lot of ways. And one of them is to be part of MCC is to be part of the first worldwide Christian denomination in the 2,000-year history of Christianity that has ordained at least as many women as men for ministry. And to be part of MCC is to be part of the first worldwide Christian denomination in the 2,000-year history of Christianity that has elected a woman to lead that worldwide denomination. Yeah. You know, former President Barack Obama said, "Every man who ever accomplished anything of importance in this world was either trying to live up to his father's expectations or he was trying to live down his father's sins." Just look at how differently Jesus treated women from the patriarchal culture all around him. He didn't learn that from that culture. He didn't learn that from his traditions. He sure didn't learn it from the religious influences in his life. He learned it from seeing how Joseph treated Mary. So accepting Joseph's gift and refusing to conform could mean shared privilege and power and prerogative between women and men. But then, patriarchy has been just about as destructive for men as it has been for women. So let's see how a unwrapping Joseph's gift might help that by changing the way we men relate to each other. After serving as the pastor of MCC in the Valley in North Hollywood, California for 10 years, and before coming here to pastor MCC Austin, I worked for a little over 2 years as an HIV educator and counselor at the HIV Healthcare Center in West Hollywood, California. At that time, it was the largest early intervention healthcare center for HIV in the world. We had a little over 2,000 clients. And back in those days, most people didn't test for HIV until they suspected they already had it, until they thought they were probably already sick. And so we had 2,000 clients, 98% of them were men, most of them, but not all of them, gay men. And they would come and be tested, and if they tested positive, then they would go for a lot of lab work. And then when the results of that work came back, they had an appointment with me, and I would interpret for them their lab work, which meant how sick they were, what their prognosis was. what services were available to them. And because that was a terrifying experience for most of them, we encouraged them to bring someone with you for support. And after a while, I started noticing something. Almost all of these men were bringing women to be that support person for them. In fact, of the last 111 men I met with, 99 of them brought a woman, and only 12 of them brought another man. Now, of course, per se, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In fact, in my book, I wrote about how important it is for us men always to remember the debt that we owe to the women in our lives, especially our lesbian sisters, for the ways they supported us during the height of the AIDS pandemic. When I worked at the HIV Healthcare Center, that was one of three multi-million-dollar projects in Los Angeles County that served people with HIV, and the CEOs and executive directors of every one of those organizations was a lesbian woman. But still, it raised the question for me about why more men didn't bring another man. So when it was appropriate, I started asking, and the answers I got were really just confirming what I really already knew. If you think about it, we men are socialized from birth to compete with each other for just about everything. Just last month, the Center for the Study and Prevention of Suicide at the University of Rochester published a special report on the alarming increase in suicide among men 75 years of age and above. And at the very top of their list of causes was social dislocation. And they explained that in part by saying that most men spend their lives with few, if any, authentic relationships with other men, so that by the time they age and retire and need and want friendships and companions, they are, quote, incapable of forming meaningful relationships with other males, often even those in their own families, close quote. Isn't that sad? But how can we expect anything different if we see other males as our rivals for status, for titles, for career advancement, for money, for spouses and partners? Every sport and game that is designed specifically for men pits us against each other, and not infrequently in potentially violent ways. Then for those of us who are gay, there is that prevailing psychoanalytic theory about the cause of homosexuality, which says that little gay boys are caused by overprotective mothers and distant fathers, even though I've always suspected that overprotective mothers and distant fathers are caused by little gay boys. But either way, it creates for many of us an estrangement with that first and most important male relationship in our lives, our biological fathers. And finally, as the great social scientist Havelock Ellis, who died in 1939, famously said, "We human males are the only creatures on this planet who are literally conditioned to kill ourselves and trained to kill each other." Still, Joseph's gift, his challenge, begs the question, why can't all men love and trust each other more and have deeper and more authentic relationships? I'm not necessarily talking about erotic and sexual intimacy. The rest of you men, if you want to, can leave that up to us gay men. We got that covered. I am talking about all of us, straight and gay and bi and trans men, and cisgender men, and any other way we choose to define ourselves. As some of you know, I grew up in southern Mississippi in a monolithically conservative home and church and school and society. And you can just imagine how rigidly all of these gender roles and stereotypes were reinforced everywhere, all the time, in everything. Being a man meant something very specific. And 99% of males, me included, did everything we could to conform to those expectations. And then I came into MCC. You know, in the early days of the gay rights movement, innocently, sincerely, but naively, we used to say, we're all just alike. We wanted to be accepted so much that we said, we're all just alike. No, we're not. We're different. And because of Joseph's gift to us, because of the freedom not to have to conform to what others tell us it means to be a man, we could live in the incredible diversity that is the truth of our lives as men. Gay men and straight men are different. Trans men and cisgendered men are different. The secret is in valuing those differences instead of letting them divide us. And the secret to that is accepting and practicing what I still believe are the 12 most powerful words in the English language, the truth that could solve almost every problem we've got on this planet, and here they are again. Two things can be different without one being better than the other. Two things can be different without one being better than the other. We are different. We have different experiences. And that means that by definition, we have things to learn from each other. We have opportunities to enrich our lives by deepening our friendships and relationships and refusing to see each other as adversaries or competitors. To that end, Pastor Karen asked, and I enthusiastically agreed, that in 2024, we're going to have men's retreats. They're going to be co-sponsored by Uprising and Sanctuary in the Woods. And finally, Joseph's gift to all of us, men and women, is to claim the identity that is just right and true for each of us. The tyranny that Joseph's gift seeks to free us from is the attempt to just make us all the same. Women are supposed to act like this and not like this. Men are supposed to act like this and not like this. But that defies the fact that gender is obviously one of those places where God clearly just decided to show off. I heard a candidate for president last week. He was actually railing against trans rights. But he said emphatically, God created two genders, men and women. Well, I was taught that in school. You either got two X chromosomes that make you a woman, or you got an X and a Y that make you a man. Well, what about the XXY people? And what about the XYY people? And what about the XXYY people? And what about the XYYY people? And there is even a phenomenon known as mosaicism, in which every cell in the body has a different combination of gender-determining chromosomes. And they don't think we're supposed to be different from each other? I read once that if intelligent life ever arrives on this planet from somewhere else, they're going to look around and say, wow, whoever did this was fiercely in love with diversity. There could be one kind of tree. Now, there could be one kind of bird, one kind of fish, one kind of flower, but look what there could be one kind of human being, but look what there is instead. Joseph's gift is the freedom not to conform to what other people tell you you have to be, but the right to be who you truly are. And because we really are not like most other churches, because diversity is one of our core values, because we are encouraged here to tell the truth about who we are, we actually have a little bit of a head start in this church. And wouldn't it be just like God to choose us to be an example of what it looks like if everybody unwrapped this gift and just decided to be exactly and only who God created them to be. Following